This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
Oh, okay. So, like, there's this Scottish boy. There's a Scottish boy. This gorgeous Scottish boy who I met in Wellington. And he was only here for a week. And I had this wonderful time with him. And I kept saying, no, 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 no. Oh, no, 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 no. I couldn't possibly. No, no, no. And he was like, oh, come on. Come home to my hotel. Oh, no, I'm not that sort of girl. I don't do that sort of thing. And then he said, well, look, let me walk you back to your car. I said, I've got to go home now. I've got to go home. All the time thinking, oh, come on, Gareth. Come on. Go for it. Go for it. Go back to his hotel. No, no, no. Yes, no, yes, no. So he said, okay, I'll walk you back to your car. And my car was parked on Tennyson Street next to the Symphony Orchestra. And we were just walking down Tennyson Street and he said, come on, kiss me. Come on, kiss me. And I said, oh, what the hell? All right. And he gave me the best kiss I'd had in ages. It was just fantastic. And I was just standing there. This is a perfect moonlit evening. Perfect, like, perfectly romantic sort of scene out of a movie. And then all of a sudden, this absolutely ghastly stench of rotten seafood from Cook Strait Seafoods, which was over the road, just wafted over the two of us. And he just sort of pulled himself away and stared at me in absolute horror. And I was like, what? No, it's not me. He said, oh, thank God for that. I thought I'd just made a terrible mistake. I was like, it's the seafood place. I do wash, you know. And that was the end of my beautiful romantic evening. Luckily enough, the next night I went back to his hotel room and it was much better. There was no rotten smell of seafood. So there. Made me laugh, though.
I've been in a relationship now for 10 years. And about 3 years ago, my partner was made redundant and he decided that he was going to go and see some friends of his in Australia and have a break after working for the organisation he'd been with for 20 years. And he went off to Australia and I spent the first week that he was away miserable because I missed him, because we hadn't basically been away from each other for any length of time. And some friends in Australia rang me and said, it's his birthday when he arrives, the day he arrives at the part of Australia they live in Gosford out of Sydney. And they said, why don't you come over? We've got a group of friends together and we're going to have a birthday party for him. So I thought that would be a good idea. And when I rang him a couple of days before that, I said, oh, I would be working the next 2 days, so I'll ring him after that. I'll ring him on his birthday in the evening. So that was fine. I rang the travel agent who said, oh, yeah, when do you want to fly over there? And I said, oh, I want to fly tomorrow morning, first flight out. So I did, and I flew off to Sydney, caught the train to Gosford. I'd never been to Gosford before. It was pitch black. Didn't know, it was an hour and a quarter out of Sydney. Didn't know where I was going to. Found my way there. Didn't know the people I was going to. The people that were meeting me at the other end, but managed to catch up with them. They picked me up, and the next day my partner was arriving on the train, and we arrived at the railway station after he'd rung. He didn't even know I was there, and to see him recognise me after I got out of the car and burst into tears and give me a big hug in public with no fear of what was going on was just great. And it's a moment I'll treasure for the rest of my life.
I remember when I was about 10 and my baby brother had just been born and we went up to Waitangi with the family, and that was me, mum, dad and my elder brother and my baby brother. And we went to the meeting house at Waitangi, and my father was, I don't know what he was doing, but he was honging the different carvings in the house. So I went along and did the same thing until someone pointed out to me that I was actually honging the men's dicks. But I don't know if that was like foretelling of things to come, or yes, I'm kind of one of those ones that I just never lived down.
I was asked to leave secondary school about 3 weeks into the seventh form for a variety of reasons, which I will not go into. And my mother pulled me, and I went down to Wellington, and sort of I got a job within an hour, and then I went back to Masterton, and then I sort of had to pack up and move down to Wellington. And my mother pulled me aside, and she didn't quite know how to say this in any way at all, but she didn't know I was gay at that stage. We hadn't had the coming out talk. And she sort of said, well, look, you know, you really do need to be aware of of men lurking in alleys who might draw you aside because of your cherubic looks. And she actually used the word cherubic looks. And I can remember thinking at that time that Wellington was an hour and 40 minutes away on the train, and really I couldn't wait for that hour and 40 minutes to be over, and that I was hoping that one of those men might just be on platform 9 waiting for me when I got there. Needless to say, he wasn't, and it took me about 3 months to find Wellington's gay community in 1976 or whatever.
Having a crush, that's a fun part of being gay. I think probably it's a fun part of being straight as well, but having a crush on someone, it sort of affirms that you are a person, you feel for someone, that you have the capabilities to feel for someone. I've only had one real crush, and it sort of was the trigger point to actually admit that I'm gay and then to come out, because that was the time I had a crush on my roommate. Not at the time, he wasn't my roommate, but I had a crush on this guy. He was from Weir House, and he moved in around April, and that's sort of when I noticed him, and that's when a crush develops. And at that time, I haven't had a crush before, and I didn't know what was coming over me. Yeah, and I sort of knew his roommate at that time, and his roommate wanted a single room, and I had a single room. So I took the risk of swapping rooms with him, and I actually moved in probably about 2 weeks later after my exams. And I moved in with him and spent the rest of the second semester with him, which was kind of fun. Yeah.
I guess for me, in a way, when I was thinking about this, I thought the gay memories that mean the most to me as gay things are the gay people who I remember who aren't here anymore. And it's funny to say that this is a happy gay memory, but I guess there's things I know and that I remember that no one else does about people we're never going to see again. And a couple of esoteric things that aren't events or anything. It's, I can see the spring in my friend Lee Ransfield's walk. Lee died of AIDS, I suppose, 5 years ago now. But all I have to do is just visualize him, and I can get a whole aspect of his vivacity and his joie de vivre from the way he moved. And then someone who no one will remember now, who was never a very out there gay person, didn't have a big circle of friends, quite quiet, was a guy called Wayne Dunn. And he died of AIDS, I suppose, 12 years ago, a long time ago. And it's a note in his voice I remember. And when I think of Wayne, I hear that note, and it's not as if he's never gone, because he's still 23, and now I'm pushing 40, and somehow he's sort of preserved an aspect, but all I've got left, in a way, is a vague, fuzzy picture of what Wayne Dunn looked like, and a certain note that I can remember hearing in his voice. And if I ever hear anybody else making the same sound, Wayne's back with me. And we weren't close, we weren't good friends or anything like that. But that's something that is preserved in the wiring of my brain that's kind of like a happy gay memory because he lives on in it, and that, I think that's quite neat.
Every year in Wellington over the Christmas period, there's a gay camp at a place called Vinegar Hill. And about 5 years ago, I went out there with a group of friends. And we arrived about 6-7 o'clock at night. And we all put up our tents. And it was really good because all the people around us helped put up the tent. Helped us put up our tent. We had a great big huge tent. There was about six of us in this big tent. And we blew up our lilos and things. And it's really, really roughing it. You know, there's no proper toilet facilities, nothing. And anyway, I decided to take a walk down to the river. And I'm walking down to the river and I see this woman. And the next thing, she turns around and she's got a chainsaw and she's chopping up firewood. And I said to her, "What are you doing?" And she says, "I'm chopping up the firewood for the fire tonight." And there's this really butch guy in a frock with a chainsaw. I think that's my funniest.
I got really distraught when that question was asked because the first thing that came to mind was a complete blank. I couldn't find a specific memory that revolved around me being a gay man and that made me happy. I mean, I could obviously take, well, to me, it's an obvious tack that I've got lovely, happy memories of sexual experiences as a gay man. But I wanted the question to be broader than that. I mean, yes, a wonderful, happy memory the first time at the age of 14 ever actually having sex with another male, a school friend. And it was mystical and magical and sensual and sexual. And it was like learning to breathe. It was something extraordinary. So, yes, happy. That wasn't as gay male, certainly not as a gay adult male anyway. So I sort of racked my brains about a happy moment as a gay man. And the next thing that came to mind was taking on my employer, a large airline company, over a human rights case, discriminating against gay employees in terms of not honouring or allowing special leave when partners are injured. And I fought and I fought and I fought over a 6-month period and won. They backed down. Changed the policy. And that was, for me, was a wonderful defining moment. It was great that an individual gay man could stand up against a corporation with billions and win because he knew he was right, morally and legally, finally. So, yes, that was a moment of triumph and victory and pride, perhaps. I'm not sure it was happy. I mean, what came to mind was, okay, if you've won World War II, you're glad you won, but are you happy you had to fight the war? Probably not. So, yeah, happy. And then, actually walking here this afternoon, it was a lovely moment, walking past the library, and sitting in the sun were two guys, maybe in their 20s, on a park bench, and they were obviously sitting there enjoying the time and the day. And it wasn't until I got a little bit closer, and I was just that one of them had his arms around the other one's shoulder, and was just gently stroking the side of his neck, and obviously lovers or friends or whatever. That was lovely. That was a really happy moment, just seeing these two guys completely at ease, enjoying themselves in public.